Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Longing for Sin by Kennedy Lane, narrated by Daniela Accitelli. Chapter 1. Brooklyn Walsh, December 2000, Saturday, 1:29 a.m. The two-story house was relatively quiet, but it wasn't a comfortable silence. There was an uneasiness that hung in the air that had become all too familiar over the past couple of years. The only discerning sound that drifted from the kitchen to the bottom of the staircase located in the short hallway was the loud hum of the refrigerator. The strange whine had only gotten louder throughout the week. It was as if the old model refrigerator was announcing its own forthcoming demise, screaming into the silence its appliance death song as it gave out after years of honest and faithful service. Brooke noiselessly stepped onto the hardwood floor as she stared intently at the front door, keeping a hold of the banister with her right hand. She'd heard her brother sneak out about 2.5 hours ago, which had been right after their parents had gone to bed. Jacob hadn't returned home since. Where could he have gone so late at night? It wasn't like he had any friends. There had been a time when he'd hung out with Scotty and Daryl, but they'd stopped coming around about the same time that her brother's demeanor had changed 2 years ago. She'd learned that word in English class, and she liked how it sounded in her head, but not when it was in relation to her brother. Their parents had finally started to notice the changes in Jacob's life, but she'd overheard them talking one night a couple of months ago. They thought it was simply a phase that he was going through. They couldn't have been more wrong. So, so wrong. Brooke had promised her brother that she wouldn't say a word about the time that he'd come home with blood covering both of his hands. She hadn't been a rat then, and she wasn't a rat now. She'd kept their pinky swear, even though she'd known it was wrong to do so. She had also maintained hope that things would return to normal, but Jacob had kept pulling farther and farther away from everyone. He had basically retreated into his own lonely little world. Sally had been the first of Brooke's friends to notice that there was something wrong at home after Brooke had kept coming up with excuses as to why they needed to stay overnight at her house. No matter how many times that Sally asked why, Brooke had resorted to telling white lies and coming up with excuses. At first, she'd said that her parents were fighting. One time, she'd even used the excuse that they had black mold in the bathroom after hearing something on the news about how it could cause some kind of sickness. Lately, Brooke hadn't had to come up with any reason at all. Sally seemed to have given up on changing Brooke's mind about where they spent their time when they had their sleepovers. Brooke yawned as she made her way into the kitchen. It wasn't like Jacob was going to spontaneously turn back into the brother who used to laugh with her while watching sitcoms on Wednesday nights. He rarely even ate dinner at home, claiming that he was going to the library to study or do homework. He never needed to study anything, because he was the type of student who aced everything without so much as the slightest effort. To say that her brother was smart was like saying the Pope was Catholic. It was a monumental understatement. She often wondered exactly how gifted Jacob truly was, and that knowledge made her even more scared of him. She, on the other hand, had to study for hours the night before for an exam to get a grade even remotely equal to his. Unfortunately, she would be doing that tomorrow. For this week's upcoming midterms, they needed to complete before their Christmas vacation. She'd waited so long to say that she was in junior high school, and now she would have given anything to go back a few years, when her brother had been himself, and she wasn't forced to study so hard for an A- compared to his A+. Brooke couldn't help but shiver as she reached for a glass in the cupboard next to the sink. Her dad liked to set the thermostat a few degrees lower at night, which always meant that the kitchen tile was freezing and the handle on the sink was cold to the touch. It didn't help that there seemed to be a draft coming from the kitchen window. She quickly filled her glass with water, wondering if she should have heated up some milk in their brand new microwave. The beep might have awakened her parents, though. She would just hurry back upstairs and climb underneath the covers to chase the chill away. "You should be in bed." Brooke swung around in surprise. The glass that she'd been holding slipped from her hand and shattered upon hitting the tiled floor. Jacob was standing next to the refrigerator. He was only 15 years old, and somehow had grown as tall as their dad. He had the same square jaw, brown wavy hair, and dark brown eyes. Yet there was something missing in her brother that her father exuded with every smile. Affection. Maybe it was all emotions that Jacob lacked. She wasn't quite sure. The draft of cold air that had washed over her must have come from when Jacob had opened the front door. He wasn't wearing a winter hat, but he was holding a pair of black gloves in his right hand. She'd been avoiding him lately, and this was the first time that they'd been alone in months. There was a secret part of her that wished her parents would come rushing downstairs to find out what all the commotion had been about. But Jacob didn't seem concerned in the least that they would appear. "Don't move," Jacob instructed, with what sounded more like disappointment than anger. He shrugged out of his winter jacket and tossed it toward one of the kitchen chairs. It slid to the floor, but it was far enough away that it wouldn't land on the shattered pieces of glass. "Back up onto the rug." Brooke wasn't sure why she listened to him, but she instinctively did as he directed so that she wouldn't cut her feet. She wrapped her arms around her abdomen as he began to pull on his black gloves. The light from underneath the microwave was always left on, and she could see that his cheeks were flushed red from the cold. "Where were you?" The question slipped out before she could stop it, but Jacob didn't even hesitate as he walked across the floor in his winter boots to the small closet next to the pantry. He grabbed the handheld brush and dustpan that their mother always had hanging on a nail that stuck out from the back of the door. "You didn't go to the library earlier either," Brooke said as she leaned back against the sink. She wasn't sure why she continued to talk as if she wasn't afraid of the consequences. Maybe it was because he wasn't answering her questions. He'd all but ignored her as he flicked on the overhead light. Maybe it was the bright illumination that gave her the courage to continue to speak. "Sally said that her brother was there all evening studying for his upcoming SATs. He didn't see you." Brooke had really thought that Jacob would respond to her for calling him out on his lie. But he remained silent as he went about sweeping up the broken pieces of glass. She studied him while he concentrated on getting every razor-sharp shard into the dustpan. There wasn't any blood on him like there had been the last time. At least 3 minutes of screaming electronic silence had passed by before Jacob paid her any attention. Even then, he simply motioned toward the dish towel that their mom always kept by the side of the sink. Brooke warily reached behind her before handing him the blue towel. She glanced toward the small hallway that served as her only avenue of escape. His reaction to help her clean up the mess had originally gotten her to relax a bit, but now she was debating with herself over whether or not this was some type of stalling tactic. Sally's brother was too busy staring at Pamela Murray's tits through her tight pink sweater to even notice that I was two tables over near the back, Jacob replied as he stood with a dustpan in his left hand. The towel and handheld broom were in his right. He tilted his head to the side as he studied her the way that she'd been doing to him. "Did you ever notice that they all think they have perfect, protected little lives?"
"What do you mean?"
Brooke cautiously monitored him as he slowly walked back to the closet, which was where they kept the tall kitchen garbage can. His shocking description of Pamela had been practiced with ease. probably in an attempt to throw her off her questioning. He pressed on the black pedal near the bottom and then slowly dumped out the pieces of broken glass inside with a deliberate, smooth motion. Was he telling the truth about Sally's brother? There was no way to read Jacob's body language. Sally had mentioned that Ben had a crush on Pamela Murray, which was the girl that Jacob had liked a couple of years back. He hadn't mentioned her recently, but then again, he didn't really talk to anyone in that fashion anymore. Sally and Pamela think the world revolves around them, even Ben, but he's not worth my time. Jacob secured the handheld broom to the dustpan before hanging them both back up on the nail. They all think they live these perfect little lives, inside their tiny bubbles of personal vanities compared to the rest of us. Take your other friend, Marcy. She knows that life isn't perfect, doesn't she? She sees it, feels it. She's awake. More people need to be like her. Brooke swallowed around the lump of fear in her throat. Marcy had told her just the other day that her parents were constantly fighting over a divorce. Her brother had gotten caught shoplifting a bottle of alcohol last month from the corner pharmacy and that she was failing several of her classes. Brooke and Sally were doing their best to try to help her with homework, but Marcy was just too stressed out over her horrible family life to concentrate on school. How had Jacob known about Marcy's problems? "I should go to bed," Brooke murmured, noticing how Jacob's nonchalant movements had a slight edge to them as he quietly closed the pantry door. "I have to study tomorrow for midterms this week. Don't forget to get another glass of water." Jacob still had the dish towel in his hands, wringing it between both of his winter gloves. Not in a stressful manner, but more of a subconscious practiced maneuver. The refrigerator chose that moment to go silent, and Brooke could swear he could hear her labored breathing. "I'm not thirsty anymore." Brooke kept her arms around her waist as she began to make her way through the small hallway, but she paused near the end of the staircase. She could still see him standing beside the pantry door. "Thanks for cleaning that up." "Everyone makes mistakes." This was where Jacob should have smiled at her reassuringly, but she wasn't sure that he even remembered how to smile anymore. "You're not perfect, are you, Brooke?" She didn't answer him. Instead, Brooke made her way quickly upstairs to her room, where she quietly closed her bedroom door and turned the small lock on the knob. She stared at the brass button as she listened intently for any sound that her brother had followed her upstairs. Blood rushed through her ears at an erratic pace. Jacob had mentioned a few times over the past couple of months how she wasn't perfect, especially when they'd been in front of their parents. As a matter of fact, he'd almost gotten her grounded for saying that she'd been at Sally's house when they'd gone to the mall instead. Brooke had quickly explained that Sally's mother had been the one who had needed something, and she'd had no choice but to go along with them, since Mrs. Pearson had been driving Brooke home that day. The faint, telltale squeak of the floorboard at the top of the stairs had her holding her breath and studying the knob on the door. What was his fascination with people's lives? Sally was a good person. So was Pamela, although Brooke didn't know the girl all that well. She was Jacob's age, and she seemed nice. He couldn't have been happy to see Ben and Pamela together, though. Low murmurs of conversation finally drifted from the hallway, and Brooke breathed a sigh of relief. Her dad was awake, probably wanting some of that chicken casserole her mother had made for dinner. She couldn't make out everything that was being said, but she had heard Jacob mumble something about needing a glass of water. Their father believed every word that came out of Jacob's mouth, completely clueless that he'd been out of the house for hours. Brooke shook her head in disgust, though she had trouble erasing the unease over her encounter with Jacob. The way he'd talked about Sally and Pamela had been bizarre, but even more so concerning his knowledge about Marcy's problems with her family. Brooke hadn't even made it to her bed before the house phone rang, shattering any semblance of calm. The last time someone had tried to reach them in the middle of the night, it had been the hospital calling about her grandmother. She'd had a heart attack and had been put on life support. She'd died the following day. Had the same thing happened with Grandpa? Brooke quickly retraced her steps and opened the door. Her mother was quickly coming out of her bedroom with a concerned expression on her face, and the two of them descended the stairs together. Her dad had already turned on the lamp next to the phone. Brooke heard Jacob's bedroom door open behind them.
"Can ask him. I know that he was at the library earlier this evening. Hold on."
Brooke's dad held the phone to his chest before calling out to her brother.
"Jacob, you were at the library earlier tonight, right?"
"Yeah,"
Jacob replied from behind them. Brooke glanced over her shoulder to find her brother leaning against the banister in a rather casual manner.
"I was studying for my science midterm." "Pamela Murray didn't return home tonight. Did you see her at the library?"
"I saw her,"
Jacob shrugged, as if Pamela missing wasn't all that big of a deal.
"She was hanging out with Ben Pearson."
Brooke's dad relayed the message while her mother descended the rest of the staircase. She motioned that she wanted the phone, and he handed it over to her.
"Did you try Scotty's parents? I was driving through town earlier, and I saw Pamela walking with him. Maybe he knows something that..."
"You two should go back up to bed,"
their dad said as he tightened the belt on his robe.
"I'm sure that Pamela simply lost track of time or something. She'll be home soon."
"I hope so,"
Brooke whispered, keeping an eye on her mother. She was now speaking really low into the phone, and it was hard to hear all the words.
"Good night."
Jacob wasn't standing near the corner of the hallway when Brooke finally turned around. She slowly climbed the stairs one by one, thinking back to Jacob's reaction. He'd answered the question about being at the library, but he didn't seem concerned at all that Pamela hadn't returned home tonight. Wouldn't such a reaction be normal? Brooke noticed that Jacob's door was still ajar as she got closer to her own room. He stood there, as if he'd been waiting for her. He wasn't smiling, but there was a satisfaction in his cold eyes that set her on edge.
"It's a shame that Pamela didn't come home in time for her curfew," Jacob said, tilting his head just a fraction, the way he'd done earlier tonight in the kitchen.
It was unnerving, and Brooke made sure that she was safely in her room before he finished speaking.
"I guess she wasn't quite so perfect after all."
Chapter 2 Brooklyn Sloane, January 2022, Sunday, 10:46 p.m.
"I thought I'd find you here."
Brooke Sloane didn't turn around to face the man standing in the doorway of her brand new office. There was no need, when she could see his reflection in the floor-to-ceiling windowpane. It had also helped that she'd heard the swish of the elevator doors as they'd opened in the foyer a moment beforehand, but it wasn't as if she hadn't been expecting him. Graham Elliott had a strange cyclical habit of checking in on her every third day. He'd done so for the past month, and his routine had become more than a bit irritating. Then again, she should have guessed he'd be predictable in his visits. Being a retired senior officer in the Marine Corps meant that he'd been institutionalized, in a manner of speaking. The need for structure and discipline had long since been ingrained into his core beliefs, and he wasn't likely to change his bearing in his mid-50s. He still maintained his ramrod straight posture, spit-shined shoes, and cropped hairstyle 2 years after his retirement. His moral compass was embodied by the Corps' values: honor, courage, and commitment. He also had a grating predilection of reading her as easily as she could read him, and it was rather unsettling. Both of them preferred to maintain the upper hand in all things, and she loathed to admit that he currently had an edge over her due to their existing business arrangement. "I'm postponing hiring a receptionist until after we close your daughter's case," Brooks stated in a tone that broke no argument. The present dynamic between them wasn't going to change any time soon. Highly connected supervisor and valued employee. Some might say business partners, but it certainly didn't feel that way. Still, she needed to assert some semblance of control in her work environment, and she wasn't even remotely ready to have some stranger know her daily routine and inner workings of her life as it related to the same. "I hope that won't be a problem." Graham didn't respond right away. He almost never did, preferring to measure his words with a straight-edged ruler. He said exactly what he meant when he spoke to another so that there was no misinterpreting his meaning. He took his time walking around her office, perusing the new furniture, artwork, and unique antiques that she'd put on display. She'd turned off the overhead lighting hours ago, preferring the muted, golden illumination coming from the desk lamp that she'd brought in from home. The security-recessed lighting strategically placed in the ceiling added to the quiet ambience. She wasn't sure if he was trying to decipher some hidden part of her by studying the decor, or if he was steadying himself to talk about his daughter's murder. Her irritation eased its grip in response to acknowledging his pain. Losing his daughter and then his wife so close together had been a devastating tragedy. It had been a series of events that would have brought most men to their knees. She understood his need to brace himself for the subject at hand. As for Brooke, she wasn't much for putting her personal life on display either. She had never been known to wear her heart on her sleeve. Maybe the two of them had more in common than she'd originally wanted to admit. Graham was still leisurely making his way around her office, and she fought the urge to become defensive in her choice of design. She'd gone for more of a classic and impersonal approach to decorating her office, and she was content with how it had all come together in the end. She'd chosen black furniture to offset the white walls with a matching black leather couch that she'd positioned against the far wall underneath a large portrait that was the heart of the room. She'd seen the painting in an art gallery on 8th Street, Northwest in D.C. The upscale yet quaint storefront had been established for local artists to display their work, and she liked to frequent there when she had a spare minute, which was virtually never. Nevertheless, the unique piece had caught her eye when she'd been walking by their shop. She still wasn't sure what had attracted her to the piece in the first place, but it had been the title that had intrigued her the most. Polar Opposites. The landscape of D.C. had been inverted halfway through the canvas, exposing some of the city's buildings upside down.
Interesting artwork.
Brooke wasn't in the mood to reflect upon her choice of art. She'd chosen the first executive office closest to the reception area. She'd fully expected Graham to question her over the choice, but he hadn't said a word to her. She honestly didn't care about others' opinions or the subjective order of precedence implied by them. She had her reasons for wanting to monitor the comings and goings of their clients, just as she had a purpose for keeping Graham Elliott at a professional distance. His 3-day schedule of stopping by unannounced was hampering her standard way of operating, but she'd never let him know that it bothered her. Besides, he was technically her business partner in this project. These offices were more his than hers, and she would do well to remember that.
"Brooke, this new venture is entirely yours," Graham specified, as if he could read her mind.
He finally came to stand next to her in front of the large window pane. He had no idea that he'd practically mirrored the sentiment that had been in her head just the other way around. He slipped both hands into the pockets of his black pants as he surveyed the falling snow. But she didn't trust his tranquil stance. He wasn't a man who knew how to relax. His soul was always in conflict.
"I simply fund the firm as a silent partner. I want no say in how you run the day-to-day operations, nor how you conduct your cases or the hiring and vetting of your staff. It and they are solely your choice and your responsibility."
Brooke had noticed that the flurries were falling heavier than they had been an hour ago.
The meteorologist had called for a couple of inches of snow, but she'd bet it would be closer to 4 by morning. The snow was large, fluffy, and dry. It would drift easily in the accompanying wind. It would also make for a messy commute, but she only lived a couple blocks down. She'd make the walk, and well before the city streets were filled with impatient drivers or the sidewalks were occupied by rushed and irritated pedestrians. She waited for Graham to say something else, anything else, to give her an indication of why he'd paid her another visit. As he'd just mentioned, it usually had something to do with the financial setup of their new consulting firm, but there had been nothing of late that couldn't have been communicated through email. She highly doubted that tonight's visit was going to change her view of things either. S&D Investigations, Inc. Not an ingeniously clever name for a business, but she hadn't wanted her surname to be put on display. Hell, it wasn't even the surname that she'd been given at birth. She'd chosen it from a clipboard at the courthouse the day that she'd gone in to change her name at the age of 18. Sloan meant absolutely nothing to her, other than that it gave her a bit of distance from her past, thus some level of security. S&D Investigations, Inc. had been established to take exceptionally difficult cold cases that had never been solved due to a multitude of reasons. The ones where the files had been boxed up to gather dust on some shelf in an administrative file storage locker. The same ones where families were left behind with no answers as to why their loved ones had been taken from them in such a brutal or mysterious fashion. She understood more than most what it was like to be on that particular end of a criminal investigation, but she didn't like being forced into the private sector in an attempt to give them closure. The only saving grace was that she would no longer be forced to shelve cases for purely political reasons. Brooke had told herself 1,000 times over the last 2 months that she'd get used to the change, but she'd been uneasy about the transition ever since she'd handed her resignation letter into the FBI. Being a consultant instead of an actual employee of the agency had technically made such a move relatively straightforward. Still, not having the backing of such a powerful organization made her feel somewhat vulnerable. She didn't wear vulnerable very well.
"Have you explained the situation to them?"
And there it was, the true reason behind his visit.
"You mean, have I told the 3 individuals working for me that my brother is a serial killer?"
Brooke left Graham standing by the window as she returned to her desk to collect the blazer to her black pantsuit. She'd left it hanging over the back of her chair earlier when she'd been unpacking boxes to settle into her new office.
"No, I haven't. It's not really a thing a person brings up in casual, get-to-know-you conversation. And before you follow up with the other question that's on your mind, the answer is tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
Brooke slipped her arms into the blazer before fastening the 3 buttons underneath the lapel. She then began to collect her laptop and the 2 files that she wanted to comb through regarding odd incidents that could be related to his daughter's murder. Given that she only slept 3 to 4 hours a night on a regular basis, she would use the time to make notes for her newly assembled team, providing them with an initial point from which they could kick off the investigation first thing tomorrow morning.
"Did you at least contact the lawyer who I suggested to you the other day?" Graham asked, as he turned around to face her.
He seemed concerned about her situation, which told her that he was very well aware that she was withholding information from the FBI.
"Vivian is exceptional at her job. I keep her on retainer."
Brooke picked up her favorite pen off the desk and slid it into the side pocket of her briefcase, which was more of a leather bag than anything else, to buy herself some time. She didn't want to talk to Graham about her brother, and she certainly didn't want to make this a confessional about the fact that she was misleading her former supervisor. Graham might suspect that she was concealing vital evidence from her former colleagues at the Bureau, but she needed to make sure it stayed that way. The less Graham Elliott was aware of the situation, the better he would be in the long run.
"No, I didn't contact your lawyer, though I do appreciate the referral and advice."
Brooke left her briefcase in the chair as she leaned down to pull open the side drawer of her desk. She'd stored her purse into it earlier, having forgotten to bring in the antique coat rack that she'd kept in her old office at the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?